go, we'll talk about that, Gordon. Jordan Flegel.
Hello.
Recapping NBA Finals, Game 5, OKC Thunder, up 3-2 in the series here, Jordan, one game away from basketball immortality. Can they do it? Get all of our picks, our reactions, everything later on in the podcast. It's been a wild run. It's been a wild ride all season long. Like we've been talking about, you know, throughout this this playoffs, and especially into the you know, this finale that we've been treated to. One thing I got to say though, Jordan, is it is tough. It's difficult to see other people living out your dream. I don't know if you've seen this, if it would have come across your social waves. I know I've sent you this, a screenshot of someone else that had one not long ago, and saying that this is a kind of like my life's mission, like it would be my ultimate goal to get one. But this dude, I think his name's Trent Attia. He's a sports gambling personality on Twitter. And he was at, I don't know if he lives in OKC or he lives in the area. Either way, he's a fan of the team. And so he was there courtside, and they gave him, I guess he was mouthing off in the warmups, they gave him one of those red warning slips. If no one's seen it, referees will go around and give out to rowdy crowd members, or rowdy fans within shouting distance of the players that maybe are going a little too over the line, or the players are complaining. They will give them a little red slip that pretty much just says, shut up or you're going to get kicked out. And that's my goal in life, to get one of those. That guy did get one, apparently, for mouthing off at Halliburton in the warm-ups. And then James Johnson told him to shut up. And then he said, who are you? Was the
don't
story.
Say that.
That's the claim. That's the claim.
Don't say that to James Johnson.
Yeah, but then he was bashing James Johnson. Yeah, I'm not the smartest guy to go after. But Jordan, I would love to get one of those. But again, if I'm getting one, like I that slip is not going to stop me. I think actually I'm going to – again, I would hold on to that slip. I would frame it. It would be a prized possession. But also I would probably get even more mad, and I would be like asking names of who reported me.
And it's all caught on camera. I want names as you're getting forcibly dragged out of the
I'd arena. Be on the court. If you're going to get kicked out, you may as well make it worth it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, you don't want to be carried off quietly, you know, like I forget. What was that? What was it a few years ago? Charles Oakley got kicked out of MSG for some fucking reason. You're going to make a scene if you're going to be kicked out anyway. Matt, I mean, what's the
thought this was America.
What's the one in Detroit? Is it still Little Caesars Arena?
Caesars.
Wherever that is. You need to go and make a scene in there. You're very close. You know,
I got to fine-tune that, because I don't want to end up in Venezuela or wherever if I go too overboard.
That's true. That's true. Maybe they don't even – like maybe the standard you know, in Detroit is a little bit higher. Malice at the Palace, they're like, okay.
True.
Maybe we let the fans mouth off a little bit more. We don't want to push back too much. Yeah, well, exactly. So see what you can get away with, Matt. I want to see that next year for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy though too, because like, I mean, of all the events I've ever been to for different sports and such, never been to an NFL game. Definitely something I'd like to change coming up to the season or in the very near future. But of all the sports events I've ever been to, the place that I see most fans get ejected is baseball games. And I think that is just because people are sitting there in the sun doing nothing but drinking and yelling. And it's always the craziest people. And it's like, wow, this is really embarrassing. It's bottom of the eighth and the Jays are down 5 runs. And you're belligerently freaking out right now as some like college kid tries to usher your way out of there before the cops slap on the cuffs.
But all of that, I mean, I want to see you in once, like in every major sport arena. I want you kicked out. I feel like hockey. The bar is maybe even higher or lower, however you want to put it. Like people, I've been to a few NHL games. People, I feel like they just let them yell, let them scream almost anything. You've got that, you know. You've got the glass in between you and the players. It's a little bit, you know, sort of a feels a little bit different. So you're gonna have to really go over the top there. Maybe jump on the ice, throw some beer on somebody. But
hockey's funny because that's more like the crowd just fights each other, which I think is so funny. It's just like, oh yeah, NFL, it seems to be the same, but it's actually, just like, oh yeah, this is sick, you guys are just like the players on the ice. This is crazy.
Well, Matt, do you remember when we went to that Capitals game on the trip to Washington?
Yes.
I remember there was a
kill him
there was a woman really close to us, a diehard Caps fan actually. She's a bit of a legend now that I think back to it. But she's like, kill him, fuck him up, all this stuff. Producer
Alex screaming.
producer Alex looks over to me, says, "I feel sick," and then sits down because he couldn't take the aggression.
Takes a lot to keep that guy out of a yelling match, man.
And it was pretty jarring, though. She, you know, it was nice, fun game. Mm-hmm. As soon as the puck drops, she just stood up and started going at it.
Red in the face, man.
It's takes a lot of she's a diehard. It takes a lot of courage to do that. So shout her out, whoever she is.
Well, we'll wait and see if any ejections happen in Game 6 of the NBA Finals with the Oklahoma City Thunder, as I said in the lead-in. Trying
you know Tyrese
to
Halliburton's
win.
Dad's not going to go down without swinging.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's going to go with a fight. He'll be
it's either a win or it's something happening with him.
Center court, he'll still have a poster that's still my boy. waving at the free throw line in someone's face like a matador. Yeah.
Or if the Thunder win, they're doing the whole trophy presentation, he just comes out of the, you know, out of the side, yep. Just jumps on on fucking Shea or whoever's up there. Yeah, he's going to do something.
Good fight, SGA's dad. They took a photo together. Oh, they both look like they enjoy a couple beers here and there, which respect. especially yes. if my son was in the fucking NBA Finals, was like the superstar All Star player, I would be drunk off my ass.
But,
you know, I would be the most. I'd be like LeVar Ball levels.
yes.
It's just probably not as coherent. The game five was an interesting matchup. There was a lot to break down from this one, but obviously. The big story from this was the performance of Tyrese Halliburton, or really the lack thereof. A really poor showing for a guy who has been arguably the best player for the Pacers throughout this playoffs. Had several amazing moments, highlight reel moments throughout the series, and the playoffs as a whole. Pardon me, but yeah, this was kind of one of those games to forget, and it's unfortunate because it's also not something that like he's never done before. Like, we have seen these like completely like just ball drop games where he just can't throw a pebble into the ocean, and this once again just kind of unravel before him. Obviously, I'll mention that they've been talking about the calf injury. They even before, I think it was after game four, people were talking about, oh, it looks he's kind of hobbling a little bit. It looks a little tight, and they were monitoring it, but nothing super serious ever really came of this. They kind of brushed it off, but you could tell he didn't have his step there. But really, it was I think even if there is a bit of a calf injury here, I don't think that quite excuses the 0-for-6 from the field and 0-for-4 from three, especially with some of those looks that he was given. And at the end of the day, this is the NBA Finals. There's no room for any of that shit. His team needed him most right here, and unfortunately, he just wasn't able to come up to the plate and perform. Still, chips him with 7 boards and 6 assists, but really not close to enough to help his team get over the finish line in this one.
Yeah, and like, sometimes it just is as simple as that. Like, I understand, like you said, injury problem. This could have been lingering for a couple games. This could have been lingering from the last series. Like, all these guys, once it gets down to it now in the finals, are tons of, if not most, players are dealing with some sort of nagging injury and are playing through it. Others more severe than others, and obviously this Halliburton one, that play where he kind of stumbled, I think in the third quarter in this one, looked like he either re-aggravated it or that's kind of where it happened. But like, I understand all that. And that certainly goes into explaining a performance like he had. But at the end of the day, if you're out there on the court in the finals, you have to produce or you don't, and your team loses and you're going to be judged for that. Like, it doesn't actually matter. Like in every other game in the regular season, any other time, you can sort of explain things away. It's just how you can produce on the court. And that's how, like, legendary moments are made. Remember in the finals when Isaiah Thomas, this is back in the day, Isaiah Thomas against the Lakers, twisted his ankle, and then he went out and, like, scored a shitload of points. I forgot if it was, like, back half of the game, third or fourth quarter. And he's coming up limping after every play, after he makes an and one. Like, there's so many different examples of that throughout history, and it's just that's what you got to do, and that's what it takes sometimes to get your team over the top.
Paul Pierce after shitting himself.
Paul Pierce, exactly. I'm not gonna go as far as like blaming him though for not producing if he's injured, but like that he also doesn't like it. It just is what it is. He just didn't get it done. he did not step up in the way that he needed to, and whether or not he's injured, that really doesn't matter. It's whether you can produce or you can't, and it's as simple as that. So
yeah,
you know, we talked specifically, all injury concerns aside, last podcast about how if the Pacers were actually going to win this thing, and they were in a precarious situation, even though the series was tied 2-2, you know, you've got two games, you know, potentially left to play at OKC. You've got to find a way to, you know, dig a little bit deeper and get a little bit more out of guys. And Tyrese, who has been saving, you know, his heroics for the end of games and hasn't had really like a true takeover game in this series, like he had in that game 4 against New York when he had that masterpiece where he's had, you know, other really good scoring, overall scoring games. I thought he was going to need some of that and start scoring and start looking to score himself earlier on in games. Obviously not only did he not do that, but didn't get anything going at all tonight. So that's one sort of check mark that Indiana didn't hit. But like aside from his performance, which is obviously the main thing, you're still looking around at the other guys that we pinpointed. You brought up Nesmith. I brought up Turner. They both just had kind of middling games. Like they were fine. 13
Hey, Miles Turner figured out how to get more than 4 rebounds. That was something.
True. And that's actually one of the few stats that Indiana beat OKC in as a team is rebounding. I thought they, you know, focused on that and that was really good. Got some good rebounding off the bench too. Ben Mathurin had 8. But like in terms of just the individual performances outside of Siakam, who I thought played a really good game, especially early
it was
on,
awesome.
Sort of keeping them in it. Just no one really stepped up. So everyone's going to jump on Tyrese and be like, oh, look, he didn't show up and he's the leader of the team. He needs to be better. That's all true. But that, you know, the ethos, the whole point of the Pacers is that, you know, they play as a team. The scoring can come from anywhere. And the truth is, it wasn't just him who didn't play up to the level that they need. You know, understandably, though, too, he is the head of the snake. If he's not breaking people down off the dribble and making plays, it's really hard for anyone else to do it, especially against this OKC defense, which, you know, we know is amazing. All that being said, the Pacers come back from a deficit and are within 2 in the fourth quarter. And now you're looking at, like, I actually think it is interesting to discuss and look at Rick Carlisle, his decision to put Tyrese kind of back in the game when it was McConnell that brought them back there in that third quarter, just doing everything. You texted me, where does he fall in the white boy rankings all time? And he's creeping up, my God.
100%. Modern era, he's in the top 5.
Yep, I think.
International guys don't count. Europeans don't count. North American white boys only.
See, and have we done a podcast? Have we done the white guy?
I don't think so, man.
We have. We need to do that. That's an off-season special we got to do for sure.
A lot of good names getting thrown around there in the text message chain.
Well, because we've got Caruso out there as well, doing his thing. You know,
generational matchup.
I think Hartenstein's his dad's he's black, half black, as far as I know. Yeah, so he doesn't count. But
and he's European, man. Doesn't count.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Germania. Sorry.
We need the Matt Bonners, Brian Scalabrini.
It's true. It's the white American draft. Like that's the other show on the
radio
calls it. We got to do that. But It reminded me of last year in the playoffs a lot of times when Tyrese Halliburton, you know, he had a lot of games where he would float in and out, and legitimately TJ McConnell, especially in that New York series last year, was a better option. And that's sort of what was reverted back to in you know, the back half of this game. And you can't get it back now. You can't say, you know, there's no way of knowing if you had kept McConnell in right to the end, if it would have been any different. I personally fall in the camp that, like, Halliburton's heroics are what got you here. You've got to give him a chance to do that again, even if he's hobbled. And if he says he can go, if he says he can go out there and play, which clearly he did, and he's been cleared, I'm actually okay with that decision. But it is interesting to look at it now. And it's like, you know, they had all this momentum. They were sort of coming back. Halliburton checks back in. And then they literally turn the ball over for like 8 straight possessions. Yeah, even after Carlisle calls a timeout that tries to settle things down, they turn it over immediately. And so it's kind of like a, you know, hindsight is 20/20 thing, but you do want that one back where you've closed the gap. You're here. You have the ability maybe to, you know, close out this tough game on the road and go back home and possibly win it in front of your home fans in game 6. Like, you had that on the table there. Yeah. You know,
but
I understand.
It's hindsight, but it's like at the same time, like even live, a lot of people, I think, could have made that distinction and that decision to maybe keep Tyrese on the bench. Just ride that hot hand.
Exactly. So, yeah, like I get the decision to put him back in, but, I can see the other side of it as well. And, you know, we're also assuming that, you know, that would have continued. This was a game of runs where the Thunder, maybe either way, they just would have clamped down and sort of dominated, went on that little, you know, Thunder style defensive run, which caused all those turnovers. But you are looking at this one, especially after the tough way that they lost game four. If you're the Pacers and you're thinking, you know, this was another situation where potentially we do things a little bit differently. We could have snuck out of there with a win. But again, this is really high level basketball. You had Jalen Williams having the game of his life with 40 fucking points. And the Thunder are just a really good team. So, you know, that's, you got to tip your cap to them. But if you're Indiana going forward now, not only do you not win that game, but you've now got Haliburton as like a game time decision, but potentially not even in this next one. And if he doesn't play, it's over.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, whether he's, you know, putting a performance like this or not, you still need him there. You know, not only is he still like your best playmaker and facilitator, like he's always going to be racking up assists no matter what. But like, just like as a leader on this team and, you know, a voice to have around, like obviously he can still be there on the sideline helping out and, you know, chiming in where he's needed. But like, to have him actually on the court, dressed and ready to go, will you know, be a big momentum booster. In contrast to if he's sidelined and he's sitting there in, you know, a hoodie and sweats or whatever, like that would be a huge blow. And I think that that would even, like, you know, resonate a lot with the fan base. Like, I'm sure they would try to get behind the team, but I mean, when your star player, like the heart and soul of your squad, is down and out, then you kind of feel that as well. Like, it's a very, very gutty feeling to get through. You know, on the other side of things, you know, we were talking a lot about the Pacers here. You mentioned it there with the Thunder. Like, then you got Jalen Williams. Like, you know, SGA has a, you know, not the best shooting night, but, you know, still chips in 31 and 10. You know, his best facilitating night of the playoffs, the NBA Finals, I should say, rather. And then you get Jalen Williams, who, like, up until like the fourth quarter, like, it was like, oh yeah, like it just feels like everything's going down for this guy right now. You know, he was really aggressive getting to the line, and then it kind of, you see the point totals and it's like, oh man, he's at like 33, 34 points. Like, he's really getting up there. Finishes with 40 points, 6 boards and 4 assists. An awesome performance from him. He's increased his scoring every single game throughout the NBA Finals since game one. So, I mean, I guess if you're looking for a crazy bet, Jalen Williams to go off for 50 in the game 6, book it.
At least 45.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, an awesome, tremendous performance from a guy who is really, again, starting to continue to break out as, you know, an all NBA, you know, talent in this league. You know, makes the all NBA team this year. But again, still only in his third season and like getting better every single season. And we're really watching him kind of like grow and learn on the job, which is kind of the craziest part. And the fact that he's doing that, we can see these strides being taken and the evolution in his game being made in the NBA Finals of all places is insane, almost like unheard of situation. And again, you can tell when he starts to feel it, like you know, things are clicking. He's making the right moves. He's positioned well. He's got great vision on the court. Like, this is a guy who, if he can continue developing at the rate that he has so far in his career, like on this team, like, he could be a number one option on, you know, a contending team potentially down the line. Like, he has pretty much every single skill. I don't really know if there's a weak point in his game that you could really pinpoint. He's got great size, great handle, and exactly,
like, you know, that's it.
Yeah, and that's something
common for a young guy.
Yeah, and that's something. Yeah, like, yeah, it'll come with age. That he'll get better and better. At least that's, you know, how things should progress. So, I mean, we've said it once, we'll say it 1,000 times. Like, the future is so bright and so scary for the rest of the league here, you know, in OKC. On the other side of it, you know, a guy who we've, you know, talked about being a little bit disappointing, as much as he could not find his jump shot or really any offense in this game, I do want to show Chet Holmgren a little bit in this one. You know, 4 for 15 from the field, not ideal, but 11 boards in this one, 3 blocks and a steal. I thought he was awesome just as like a traditional big man. Like the role he played and, you know, commanding his presence in the paint and, you know, making things uncomfortable for every Pacer that tried to get inside there. Like, there really wasn't much easy in this game. And a lot of the time when guys were scoring in the rim, it was when Chet was out or he just wasn't inside the paint. I thought he had an awesome defensive game. He was really controlling the glass. And that's really what this team needs. Like, it's kind of a weird situation because, again, he was brought in to be like the 1A, 1B potentially offensively with SGA, and his offense just for some reason hasn't really translated to the NBA level at this point. Albeit he's only in his second year in his career, like he's still got tons and tons of upside and room for growth. But I mean, for him to like at least not be amazing on offense, but can still find ways to impact the game. And again, I think doesn't get enough credit in this game, especially for you know his efforts and you know commanding this win. I want to give some love there to Holmgren. And the last guy I want to shout out, finally finding his jumper, Cason Wallace, 3-for-4
yes,
after not hitting
huge.
A three in the entire you know final so far. Once he hit that first one, I think he hit two more in the same quarter. Like it was just going off. Awesome game for him. Big comeback performance because he was really struggling early. And not the best production from SGA. Lou Dort was quiet offensively. Caruso really, really struggled offensively in this game. He was getting beaten up. He came up big. I want to shout out him as well. But the Thunder, again, that's why they're scary, man. This top level talent just really far surpasses what the Pacers have to offer. And that's kind of what makes this Tyrese Haliburton, goose egg from the field even bigger to me as an issue, because if you are relying on him to get you the wins, like you can't allow the other team's top two players combined for 71 and then you drop four.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to work. You're not going to win. You're relying on TJ McConnell to put up 18 points in 21 minutes. And in what was like an insane like streak there where he was just taking it to the rim. He was actually shooting threes, which was crazy. Not really part of his game. It was a very like just very, very like a statement-making game, I felt, for the Thunder. But again, in all that, like you said, the Pacers still had that fight. They still dragged their way back into the game. Game six, I still would say, is a 50-50 in my books.
It just is what it is. Like, because if you think about how much fight the Pacers showed as a group here, the fact that you get a really good Siakam game, Haliburton didn't even have to have like an A-plus game for them to win this. Like if everything else was equal, you could have still had those sort of middling performances from the rest of the starting five, Nesmith, Turner, and Nembhard, who also himself, in Nembhard's case, just really wasn't there on the offensive side of things in this one. You can't waste or throw away a game like that and just not produce at all near the level where you're expected to, because it could cost you the title. Like that's where we're at with the Pacers. Like I think a lot of people, even me, still sort of see this as like a kind of crazy fun story that the Pacers made it all the way to the finals when I don't think most people had them getting out of the second round. Like I understand some people picked them against the Cavs, but neither of us did. And they weren't favored to get anywhere near this far, but they've shown in this finals, they've showed going up 2-1 against the Thunder, and then having that fourth game at home and coming down the stretch of the series, like they have played up to the Thunder's level. They can absolutely, and the key word is can, absolutely beat this team. The stakes have just gotten way higher if you're Tyrese. And I know we're used to him having these types of games where it's like, we've kind of forgotten that he was out there. Rarely to this extent where he literally misses every single one of his shots. It happened. It was very, very under very rare circumstances where you're going to win a game if you're the Pacers with him having a performance as bad as that. And that's just where we're at. Luckily they did their job and went into OKC in game one and stole a game. And so they're still in a position here to force a game seven, and they still have a puncher's chance here to win this thing. But they're going to have to really believe, and Tyrese is going to have to, if he can, again, I don't want anyone, I don't want a KD situation where, you force a guy out there and then he tears his fucking Achilles. But if he can go, he's going to have to go and give absolutely everything he can, in order to tie this series up. Like there's no way around it. You're looking forward to, Thursday night's game here. It's like, you're going to hope that things shift again in terms of the role player production, which has been happening the last few games. Like, Indiana's bench and their role players play way better at home, vice versa for the Thunder. Like Aaron Wiggins showed up again, even though he had been kind of disappeared the two games before this. He goes off, hits four threes, and just provided that sort of bench boost. And if you're Indiana, you're hoping that that all disappears for OKC. It's going to be a lot of heavy lifting on Shea and Jay Will yet again, and you get some kind of miracle game or a couple like half miracle games from some of these bench guys on the Pacers, which they've already shown that they can do. Like Mathurin, we saw him go off in that game three. And you know, McConnell and Toppin have had really good stretches here. So I'm not counting the Pacers out at all. It's just that the Tyrese injury is obviously what we're going to have to monitor and see if he can go. But it, again, like it's funny, this whole series, like, I know there's a lot of analysis, you know, to be had. There's really good coaching in this series. There's some high level stuff going on. Dagnall, obviously, the last couple games went back to that double big lineup. But overall, I think both these teams know what they need to do. And it's kind of that they sort of understand each other's games at this point. It's just kind of coming down to who's hitting more shots, who's hustling a little bit more for the 50-50 balls, who's playing a little bit better just in general. And that's kind of where we're at, especially when you get this far into a series approaching a game six. Like, there's not many surprises left. There's no more schemes to pull out. Like, this is just going to be who can dig a little bit deeper, who can sort of summon a great performance. And, you know, when you look at it in game five, that's another thing I want to give props to the Thunder for is, it felt like they really got back to who they were and what their game was, just jumping out on people, especially when they're at home, using that home crowd, feeding off that energy to get out and run. There was a whole sort of narrative going into this series of like, if you're the Thunder, don't just get into a track meet with the Pacers because that's what they want. You know, don't run and gun with them. Try and slow the game down and muck it up. And it's like, I understand that logic. But a lot of the times when the Thunder, you know, especially those two games in Indiana, game three and four, were trying to do that and slow things down and be methodical, their offense just looked kind of stinky and just like nothing was really working for them. Everything was tough. And Indiana's going to get out and run anyway. No matter what they do, Indiana's going to try and push the pace. But the Thunder were a great pace-pushing team all year, too. That was their identity. Mm-hmm. Get stops and then get out and run. And that's why Jalen Williams had 40 points. So many times he would just, you know, grab a rebound or get it kicked out to him on an outlet and just fucking zoom like a fucking horse down the fucking court and just get easy baskets before Indiana could get back on defense.
Jalen the Stallion.
Yeah. And it's just like that's part of OKC's DNA as well. That's not just Indiana's thing. And it looked good and they felt comfortable getting back to that sort of free flowing style, getting out in the, you know, in transition and getting some easy baskets. So, yeah, it's just a war of attrition. I'm gonna zag, I think, from a lot of you know, people. I've seen a lot. I would say the majority of the takes I've seen, you know, with or without the Halliburton injury news, saying that they think OKC is gonna close it out. I'm pretty confident this is going seven. I just feel like Indiana at this point, again, even in this game five, they never looked scared out there to me, really. They might have looked like kind of flustered and bothered by OKC's defense, sure, but they're not. I don't think they feel fear towards this very young Thunder team. And I think at home in front of their fans, they're going to know it's their last chance there. I think they're going to do just enough to get a win. And I think OKC, knowing in the back of their minds that they can come back to game seven and have another chance, aren't going to be able to, you know, reach that level that they need to close out the finals on the road, which is really fucking hard just in any circumstance. So, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, Matt, but I'm quite confident that we're going to be back on Saturday or whenever it is for game seven.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously I'm pulling for a game seven. I want to see a game seven.
If Tyrese plays, if he doesn't play, that's a different story. Just throwing
and,
that out there.
And that's the thing. I think that the first couple minutes, just watching him, will be a big indicator of how the game will go. One area that, and we kind of briefly mentioned it there, touching on it, like the I think will really dictate who wins the, you know, this pivotal huge game six, is the turnover battle. I mean, it was 22 turnovers for the Pacers in the last game, 32 points off of turnovers for the Thunder, which, again, we talked about previewing this series, that is the bulk of the, you know, their offense is driven from you know, their amazing defense turning into offense. So the Pacers are going to have to take care of the ball. They're going to have to play a lot of pressure. Like, it's It's tough because I think that honestly their pathway to beating them might be to slow it down and to really like hunt for good shots instead of pushing the pace, which is difficult to do because, you know, obviously pushing the pace and having that high powered offense that just doesn't want to stop is a you know what got them all the way here. So I don't know if you want to totally zag from it you know completely with your season on the line in the NBA Finals, but I do think that maybe that is what you're gonna have to do. You're gonna have to go mano a mano and win a couple of those battles if you're gonna have any success, because this Thunder team, I still think, you know, they're very young. I don't think that if they get hit in the mouth and the crowd is reaching like a fever pitch out there, I think that they could, you know, maybe get a little bit scared. Like you say, the butthole clenching time will commence. And yep. I don't think that, you know, SGA and Jalen Williams will be able to do it on their own, because I'm expecting, you know, decent games from both of them. But everybody else in that lineup is really a question mark on what their overall offensive production will be. Defense is generally correct. Always there, but offensively, you never know. Whereas, yep. you know, I think that the floor of a lot of these guys on the Pacers is actually a little bit higher when it comes to that offensive production. Yep, so
for sure.
I wouldn't be shocked if, like, I honestly still am sticking by it. It is kind of a 50-50. I came into this, the finals, I believe my official prediction was the Thunder in six.
Yep.
I just don't like watching teams win it on the road and then it's like an empty stadium. It's just,
I know. At home, it's way better.
Yeah, for my own preference, I would like them to win in seven if they're going to, and I think I would also like to not have to see Tony Bradley play basketball at all. I can't yes. believe that fucking guy was out there for 12 minutes. Was trying to scrap
Johnny Furphy.
With,
yeah, hey, got a good white boy good basket in there.
Yep.
Where is he in the rankings?
Missed the and once we dropped practice free throws. But yeah, I think that the Pacers should be able to do it, but if the Thunder can come out strong and just get out to a decent lead, I think that the Pacers' devil magic may finally have worn out a little bit. But you never know what to expect when these two teams go head-to-head, super evenly matched. I'm just hoping for a good game out of them, you know, whichever way the cookie decides to crumble. But my official prediction, going with the Oklahoma City Thunder in six to win the series. Jordan going with seven. We will see how this is going to end.
You want a game seven
finishing?
Matt? Don't you?
Oh,
want
yes, I would love it.
Don't we deserve a game seven? I feel like this series. Another reason I'm picking it. It just feels like that's what deserved. Like it deservedly mm-hmm. needs to go seven. You're right. It might go six. Obviously, Thunder have the ability to do it, but it just feels like these teams after five games, it feels like it should be, and then after six, should be tied. That's just what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Well, especially with the Oilers shitting the bed the way they did in that game six. So let's not see that happen again.
No.
But get at us at Big Doug Ball Talk, X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, for all the old heads out there. Help us help you help us. Give us your takes. What do you think is going to happen in game six? Picks, predictions, we want to hear it. Craziest, hottest takes. And if it goes to game seven, who's going to close it out? Let us know what you think at Big Doug Ball Talk. And we will be back. Maybe recapping the final Friday. Postseason, maybe the final game of the final Big Dog Ball Talk season four or whatever the fuck we're on. Recapping the final one or the penultimate one. It's one or the other. But we will be back. Yeah, we're probably Thursday or Friday. Be on the lookout for that one. It will be ahead of a potential game seven or potentially prelude into the off season. So be on the lookout for that and enjoy every single second that we can get of NBA basketball while it is here. Until then, this has been Big Dog Ball Talk. I go Jordan Flegel. As my good friend Jordan always says,
I can't say go Oilers go anymore. I guess I watch the fucking Blue Jays. They're actually doing okay. I looked at the standings today. I was like,
they're
okay.
All right.
I'm going to have to start tuning in. I've not watched any of them so far this year. Just a few highlights.
Boys of summer.
The Oilers, I mean, all I can think about, Matt, that graphic, have you seen it going around? The Leafs, when they were up 3-1 after in the third period, up 2-0 in that series, only team to take them to seven. What a cruel world we live in.
If there was going to be a year for them to win, man, it was this year. It's insane to say that legitimately is probably true, and that if they don't completely shit the bed in game seven like they always do, then they might have won the Stanley Cup. So it's a sad day to be a Canadian. The Floridians win again.